Welcome to Melbourne Central's Shot Tower Square. I'm Dale Campisi, author of Melbourne Precincts, and I've designed this walking tour to lead you through the story of the historic Coupe Shot Tower and this fascinating part of Melbourne CBD, from the boom years of the gold rush right through to the present day. Let's start the tour here in Shot Tower Square, on level 1 in the Latrobe Street building. Take a seat if you can, and crane your neck so you can see all the way up the tower to the glass cone above. Don't worry. You won't have to stay in this position for long. Surely one of the most Instagrammed buildings in Melbourne, the Coupe Shot Tower has become one of the city's most enduring landmarks, but it's also one of the most significant buildings in Australia's industrial history. The Coupe's Tower, named after the family who built it, is one of only three shot towers remaining in Australia. The oldest of these, and the only one you can climb, is in Hobart. The tallest is also owned by the Coupe family, and is just 5 kilometres away in Clifton Hill. Thanks to the shopping centre first built around it during the 1980s, the Coupe Shot Tower is the best preserved of all three. Shot towers produce shot for guns, and here at this shot tower, they could produce some 25 million individual shot pellets every hour. But the Coupe family didn't just make shot here. They made all manner of lead products, from old-fashioned weights to flashings for windows, washers, nails, solder and lead light frames, the stair grips for Melbourne's trams, and all of the lead pipe that was used to encase the city's very first electricity system. This site was a powerhouse of industry in central Melbourne. During the 1830s, wild emus could be seen walking down Latrobe Street, but by the 1860s, the block bounded by Swanston and Elizabeth, Lonsdale and Latrobe Streets was a tangle of laneways. It was home to ironmongers, clothiers, cigar makers, hoteliers, tailors, jewellers, confectioners, furniture makers and coach builders, as well as more than 30 residences. This was the working heart of the city at the time, and the Coupes were right in the middle of it. Now, let's go and find out a little more about shot making inside the shot tower itself. Head up the escalator located on the right-hand side of the tower. When you reach the first landing, turn left into R.M. Williams. Now pause your device and resume once you've reached the next destination on the tour. It's quite a small space in here, isn't it? You're standing on the second floor of the tower, in what is now R.M. Williams and the Shot Tower Museum. Below was a delivery and dispatch area. Above, the tower soars 10 stories. When it was built in 1889, it exceeded the city's height limit by 6 metres, and it would remain the city's tallest building well into the 1940s. The process of making shot was first patented in 1782 by an Englishman named William Watts, who, after a night of too much strong drink, observed the spherical shape of falling raindrops. Much like Isaac Newton and his apple, Watts was inspired to test his theory. He modified his own house in Bristol in the UK to build the world's first shot tower. 3 stories up, 3 stories underground. Imagine a shot tower in your own house. Shot is made from lead and is much favoured by small game hunters. All the lead used at the Coupe Shot Tower came from Port Pirie in South Australia, where it was mined from the ground and carted by train to Melbourne. A typically price-volatile metal, lead was sometimes bought in bulk in stockpile on the first floor of the buildings you can see flanking the tower. On a shot-making day, the men would fire up the steam furnace, that's the chimney you can see behind the tower, and the shot-maker would take the 300-odd stairs to the top of the tower, where he would use a pulley to haul the pig iron, in the form of lead bars, to the top. There, he'd fire up a gas ring vat and melt the lead, which boils at a reasonably low 118 degrees Celsius. Using arsenic to separate the lead from the dross, he would ladle the molten lead into a colander, and the lead would fall 132 feet into a vat of water on the second floor. By the time it hit the water, the molten lead would have cooled into spheres of lead shot, which were then shoveled into rolling machine dryers, each punched with holes for auto-sizing, on its way to being packed into bags. It was then dispatched for use in shotguns, on scales, in pinball machines, and as part of puzzle games. It was even bought and used as ship's ballast. Let's go and take a look at the shot tower from the level 2 dining hall. Head up the escalators again and double back to the balcony overlooking Shot Tower Square. As you walk up the escalator, look left. Notice the bricks on the roof of the flanking building? They're carefully piled up there because they've come loose from the building. They're heritage bricks and were protected by the National Trust in 1973 when the Coupe Shot Tower was declared a unique and peculiar landmark for Melbourne. Now pause your device and resume once you've reached the next destination on the tour. Now, a little family history. The Coops were a busy family, and their plumbing supplies business in Shot Tower was a family-run business from the day James Coop the Elder stepped off the boat in 1855. At the time, Melbourne was gripped by gold fever. The population had ballooned from 30,000 to 130,000 in just 5 years. James Coop, however, was no fool for gold. He came to supply the burgeoning colony with that most essential of needs, plumbing. Initially operating from a small shop on Collins Street adjacent to the Regent Theatre, James Coop's business grew quickly and by 1868 moved to larger premises on Knox Place in the city's manufacturing precinct. There was no shot tower then, just a ragtag bunch of single, two and three-storey buildings. There was no sewage system, Elizabeth Street regularly flooded, and there was no gas or electric lighting. By the 1880s, James's son Walter was running the show with his own son, also named Walter. The rich gold deposits and the mass immigration it inspired had made Melbourne one of the richest cities in the British Empire. The Coops continued to expand their business, this time into shot manufacture. In 1889 and 1890, up and up went Walter Coop's shot tower. The castellated red brick tower eventually topped out at 50 metres, several metres above the city's height limit, and of course, the tallest building in the city. The shot tower, however, was no mere monument. By 1894, the Coops were producing 6 tonnes of shot per week here. The same year, the family acquired the Clifton Hill shot tower when its operator went out of business due to the Great Depression. This made Coops the largest manufacturer of shot in the Southern Hemisphere, supplying businesses across Australia and Southeast Asia. By 1919, Walter II's daughter Ellen had assumed control of the business. Now she was a remarkable woman. There weren't many women running businesses at the time, let alone in heavy industry. In an incredibly rare instance, she was also awarded custody of her son following divorce from her husband. She ran the business for 20 years, but her life was cut short when she fell off the back of a tram on Gertrude Street while commuting between the family's 2 shot towers. In 1939, James Coop the Younger took over the business following his mother's death. During World War II, he volunteered for the Army, Navy, and Air Force, but was repeatedly rejected owing to his valuable knowledge of lead and shot manufacture. As we know, World War II changed the whole world. Metals prices remained volatile, while plastic emerged as a cheaper, cleaner, and more reliable competitor for many lead products. Lead was out of fashion, and arsenic, a crucial though toxic part of lead manufacturing, could kill you. The Coops shut the City Tower in 1961, and finally the Clifton Hill Tower in 1976. For the next part of the tour, we'll look at the significant changes this city block has undergone since the shot tower stopped its daily operations. We'll head to the State Library forecourt, but let's take the long way, past Knox Place and McIntyre Alley. Now pause your device and resume once you've reached the next destination on the tour. The route we're about to take was only made available 10 years ago, when architects Ashton Raggett McDougall were tasked with renovating the centre. Head down to ground level and walk out onto Little Lonsdale Street. Take a left and head up the hill. You'll see Knox Place on the left just before you reach Swanston Street. ARM made all kinds of changes to the layout of the original Melbourne Central, opening the centre up to its central city location by connecting it to the train station below, carving out north-south lanes across the block as well as new diagonal cut-throughs that Melburnians had always desired, and letting in the natural light. In the process, the shot tower and flanking building was given back its street frontage. Now you can wander from the shot tower right through to Swanston Street or Lonsdale Street. From Knox Place today, you can see glimpses of the city's surrounding towers, but the laneway, at least functionally, is pretty much the same as it was in the 1890s. It's a service and delivery alley. Just imagine shifting 6 tons of lead through these tiny alleys every week. Now let's head over Swanston Street to the State Library lawn. Look out for the library's impressive dome on the way. It's the largest of its kind in the world. Now pause your device and resume once you've reached the next destination on the tour. In the early 1970s, development in the area around the Shot Tower was frozen as the Melbourne City Council explored the site's potential. The Coopes Shot Tower was heritage listed, recognised as a unique and peculiar landmark, and so when the City Loop Authority took over the site, they knew they would have to dig carefully around and underneath the towering structure. Initially, every building on the block except the Shot Tower and St Francis's Church was slated for demolition. In the end, many were saved, but all of the shops fronting Latrobe Street had to go in order to construct the City Loop. Museum Station was the first station to open on the city's $500 million underground rail loop. It was then known as Museum Station because the Melbourne Museum was located across the road, in the building that now houses the State Library. Passengers emerged from the 29-metre-deep station into Queen Elizabeth Plaza, a vast open space on the corner of Swanston and Latrobe Streets, right in the middle of the city. The Queen herself opened the plaza, but it would only ever be temporary. The disused Shot Tower remained, a monument to the city's industrial past, but also a bit of an albatross around the neck of its future. Having failed to secure an anchor tenant for the Shot Tower site, the state government put the development out to public tender in 1983. Japanese firm Kumiga Gumi won the tender and constructed Melbourne Central between 1986 and 1991 at a cost of $1.2 billion. That was big money in those days, but then, at 1.5 city blocks, so was the development. Designed by architect Kisho Kurokawa, Melbourne Central was not a simple development project. The centrepiece was the 55-storey crystalline form office tower, but the real challenge was preserving the Shot Tower, as required by its heritage listing. Kurokawa's solution was to marry the old with the new and encase the Shot Tower in a 20-storey glass cone, the largest of its kind in the world, and a counterpoint reference to the State Library's dome. When it first opened in 1991, Melbourne Central was marketed as the life of the city. 160 specialty shops, 30 cafes and food stores, and Japanese department store Daimaru taking up 6 floors. It also included undercover footbridges across Lonsdale and Little Lonsdale streets to link the centre with Myer and the city's traditional retail heart on Bourke Street. Now let's head back over Swanston Street and into Knox Lane. Not to be confused with Knox Place, this is the laneway entrance to Melbourne Central that runs off Swanston Street, directly opposite the State Library. From here, we'll head back down into Shot Tower Square. Now pause your device and resume once you've reached the next destination on the tour. When the centre first opened, it was home to the now famous Marionette Watch. In those days, the watch was connected to a giant 12-foot-long chain. Today, the cockies and koalas and galahs still play Waltzing Matilda every hour. In 1991, a hot air balloon and a biplane also dangled in mid-air underneath the cone. Melbourne Central had a giant video screen, murals depicting trades throughout the ages, a rooftop amusement park, and even a serene and surreal butterfly house. The 50-metre-tall Shot Tower took centre stage in what felt a lot like a retail theme park. Some loved Daimaru, some hated it. Everyone in Melbourne talked about it. But department store retailing is a difficult business. Myer and David Jones weren't about to give over any market share to a Japanese interloper. After a decade of competitive stocktake sales, the Daimaru department store finally closed in 2002. The owners paid $30 million to abandon their lease, which was not actually due to expire until 2016. From the base of the shot tower, you can see the ghost of Daimaru. Look up above the cinema and you'll spot two escalator landings, but no escalators. For our final stop, let's head to Hamish Munro's Kisho Prize-winning artwork on the Level 2 concourse. Walk up the escalators from Shot Tower Square and keep heading south toward the Lonsdale Street Link Bridge. Now pause your device and resume once you've reached the next destination on the tour. 25 years on from Melbourne Central's opening, art is as much at the centre's heart as retail is. Station users will know Jeff Hogg's transport mural adorning the train station's Elizabeth Street concourse. The shot tower itself has been the backdrop for artistic projections during White Night, as well as Melbourne Central's own nightly Shot Tower Heritage Week sound and light show. Street art by Dabs Myler, Kami and Sasu and Insa adorns walls and pillars throughout the centre. The Marionette Watch, kitschy as it is loved by locals and visitors alike. There's also the curious flip sign mounted on the building's facade at the corner of Latrobe and Elizabeth Streets. The glass cone's architect, Kisho Kurokawa, has recently been remembered through the Kisho Prize, which was established to commission a new, original artwork that would capture and respond to the city's essence. The winning artist, Hamish Munro, decided to reference human traffic flow by constructing a hanging artwork that inflates and deflates according to the movement of people inside Melbourne Central. Now installed here on Level 2, it flutters to the beat of the millions of people who pass by the Shot Tower every year. And that concludes our walking tour. Thanks for joining me. If you'd like to find out more about the history of Melbourne Central, the Shot Tower Museum is open every day of the week. Visit the guest services desk on Level 1 for more information on opening hours. And enjoy your explorations.